Good morning, everyone. We've got quite a few people in the audience we haven't seen for a while. Welcome. Good to see you. Looking forward to your testimony. This is the Saturday, November 9th, 2013 meeting of the Washington Fish and Wildlife Commission. We have on our agenda for the first item, item number 11, open public input. And we have one person who's signed up for the open public input. And I don't, David Jennings, I don't think I have to tell you what the rules are.
You have more than one signed up.
Oh.
You have
them. Yeah.
Right there.
Oh, these are all, I'm sorry. I thought these were for the item 12. These are all open public input?
Yes.
Okay, sorry.
Signed up for.
Okay, great. We have a number of people. Ed Wickersham, would you come forward? Then I will repeat the rules, not for your benefit, but for everyone else's. The commission allows the public who wishes to testify 3 minutes. When you hear the beeping noise, that means your time is up, and we'd like you to conclude your remarks. Thank you. Mr. Jennings.
Madam Chair, Commissioners, Director, thank you for the opportunity. David Jennings, Olympia, Washington. I wanted to talk about 5 topics very briefly. The amphibian presentation yesterday, surf smelt spawning, a plague in small mammals in the West, and prairie listings that are coming up. The amphibian presentation yesterday was an excellent presentation, but it actually wasn't the blue sheet request. The blue sheet request was asking for a status, population status and trend on all of our amphibians, with a particular focus on the non-listed species, because those are the ones we may not know much about. So if you had gotten a table that said, here's all the species, population stable, increasing, decreasing, unknown, and maybe a map of current extant versus historical range, that really would have been helpful to point out maybe we're not monitoring our common species as well as we want, and the fact is we don't want a lot of our amphibian species to be like black-tailed jackrabbits, common and then very rare. So that ambient monitoring of citizen science is really where I was hoping the focus was going to go. You're going to be hearing, I think, soon, surf spelt spawning recommended changes. It makes no sense for the current regulations to allow people to focus on spawning aggregations and really go where we've got, you know, the adults trying to breed and really targeting them 24/7. So hopefully when that comes up, you'll do consideration. NPR, a week or two ago, had an article about the fact that they're finding plague in small mammal populations across the Rocky Mountain West in really large amounts. It's almost an epidemic, and that really has multiplying effects for the predators associated with them and the associated species. My question is, are we looking for that here in Washington, and have we found it? Fourth one is prairie listings. We've listened in the past a lot about the pocket gopher, the some of the checkerpot butterflies. Those are looking like they're getting listed, the horned lark. The primary habitat left in Washington State is in Thurston County. We have 3% left of the quality prairie habitat we used to. I'm asking that the department step up and help the county figure out how they're going to pay for a lot of the land acquisition that's going to happen as they move through down their HCP. These are priority species for us in Washington. And when I look at how much money we're spending on land acquisition around the state, I really hope that we are focusing in now with the current listings coming up on making sure we're picking up prairie habitat in Thurston County. Thank you very much.
Very good. Any questions? Okay. Message delivered. Daryl Thomas, would you come forward, please? Mr. Wickersham.
Good morning. Can you hear me okay? Okay. I'm Ed Wickersham speaking to you today for CCA Washington. We again wish to applaud your historic reform policy for Columbia River fisheries. Moving the gill nets to enhance safe areas and prioritizing recreational fishing on the Columbia main stem. We followed the implementation closely this year and have some concerns that we believe deserve your policy oversight. Your policy requires a 4-year transition to a recreational priority on the Columbia River. Gillnet use limited to safe areas and limited mainstem mark selective commercial fisheries using alternative gears like seines. By 2017, the commercial fishery will be significantly transformed. Decisions made now and in the near future will heavily influence that transformation. As you know, the department appointed an emerging fisheries advisory board to provide input on future commercial fisheries. Ideally, this board should provide the sort of innovative recommendations necessary to transform the fishery. We were very disappointed when the department failed to select a single participant who was not an active gillnetter. We believe your active involvement and guidance will be crucial to ensure the implementation remains on track. To plan a transformation to the future mainstem commercial fishery, a good starting point is to understand the makeup of the current gillnet fleet. We recently requested data for the Washington fleet from the agency for the years 2007 through 12. We were unable to determine how many total licenses were issued for those years, but we did determine the value of landings per license, actually fished. We will send you our analysis electronically, but for now I will briefly summarize. During the 6 years in question, only 154 gillnetters landed fish. Of that 154, 24% fished only 1 year, and only 11 gillnetters made more than $20,000 per year. Total landings for all fishers for the entire 6 years was less than $5 million. Columbia River, the data confirms that Columbia River gillnetting is essentially a part-time activity, with few involved in the endeavor, which supports a transition to a very limited number of commercial fisheries for future mainstem fisheries. The more capital-intensive nature of certain alternative selective fishing gears also supports a significant contraction of number of fishers. In order to begin this transformation, we believe it is essential that appropriate seine fisheries, both beach and purse, must commence in 2014. The department must ensure that impacts are made available for such fisheries. Seine should gain opportunities not only on marked stocks, but also on harvestable runs in zones 4 and 5. The seine test data indicates that seines could be fished very effectively in those areas and would bring the added benefits of low handle rates on sturgeon and low steelhead mortality. There is no valid reason for delay, especially considering the nearly $7 million already spent in testing those seines, which is more than the total ex-vessel value of Washington's lower Columbia River gillnet landings for the last 6 years. As you know, your policy identified a pilot seine fishery for 2013, which did not happen despite promises to the contrary. We would suggest it is critical that the Commission ask for a firm implementation schedule. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Stan Brogdon, please come forward. Okay, Mr. Thomas.
Okay. I'm Darrell Thomas from Kalaman, and I would like to echo Ed's thanks for your visionary Columbia River Fisheries reform policy and testify on another area of concern related to its current implementation. As you're aware, Your department is moving forward with a proposal to turn the Columbia River Cathlamet Channel into a safe area. CCA has raised a number of concerns and questions about this proposal. We respectfully request that the Commission give this proposal greater scrutiny and provide appropriate policy guidance. As you know, a significant part of your new policy will move the commercial gillnet fishery out of the mainstem and into enhanced safe areas. Increased hatchery production was recently transferred to the Oregon safe areas, and work continues to find additional sites on both sides of the river. We have supported this part of the policy, but believe the Cathlamet Channel proposal has a number of serious flaws. First, you can plainly see in any map of the lower Columbia River, the Cathlamet Channel is part of the main stem Columbia River, not a slough or off-channel site. While it does not allow heavy commercial traffic, it does permit your round-year passage for small and mid-sized vessels, including the many recreational anglers that enjoy fishing in that area. More importantly, the key feature and purpose of a safe area is to allow for the commercial harvest of returning hatchery stocks, with minimum impacts on upriver and ESA listed salmon and steelhead. The test fishing data on the Cathlamet Channel indicates an unacceptably high 50% interception rate for upriver spring Chinook, many of which are ESA listed. It also shows that nearly one steelhead was caught for every two lower river Chinook landed. On numerous occasions, CCA has pointed to this data and asked for additional analysis by your department about before any decision was made to move the Safe Area Hatchery production to the Calamet site. After making multiple requests in the CERPA process and in communication with your staff, we've been told the matter will be addressed by the Columbia River Compact 3 years from now. We believe that the establishment of a safe area at the Calamet site represents a significant policy decision that deserves your scrutiny and involvement. Due to the high interception levels of non-targeted upriver stocks in the Calamet Channel, a safe area fishery there could lead to premature closure of other safe area fisheries in order to stay within the commercial allocation of upriver impact under your policy. This would be unfortunate since the reform package has already increased hatchery production in the other safe areas, and future very low interception rates of upriver stocks compared to the Calamet Channel. We fear that managers may opt to just shift more impacts to the commercial sector to account for this, in spite of the clear intent of the policy and despite the hatchery transfers going to the other off-channel safe areas. This episode has many of our members asking, if they can designate the Calamet Channel as a safe area, what prevents them from doing the same for other parts of the main stem? Unfortunately, without any standards for what constitutes a safe area, there is nothing to prevent this from happening.
Mr. Thomas.
Thank you for your time.
Mr. Holtzmiller.
Being the newbie on the board and from the east side, what's CCA?
It's Coastal Conservation Association that's been involved in a lot of the policies that's been made. We've got chapters all over the state. We got some in your side of the mountain.
I'm getting hit with a ton of acronyms.
Okay, CCA. It's a okay. To answer your question, Jay.
Yeah, you did. Thank you very much. Heath Heikla. Hey, Mr. Brogdon.
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Stan Brogdon. I am president of CCA Washington and a resident of the Tri-Cities. I, too, am here to support the implementation of the Columbia River policy, although I also share some of our concerns and recommendations. CCA has committed significant time and effort towards adoption of the plan in both states. Some aspects of the plan have proven extremely unpopular amongst our rank and file, including the barbless hooks and the new $10 endorsement fee in Oregon that matches the one we have in Washington. We've remained supportive of the plan because we know this policy will benefit our fish stocks, recreational fisheries, and the economy. However, we believe greater vigilance is needed to ensure implementation remains on track and that the department takes a more active and transparent role in initiating the selective fisheries. In light of WDFW's disappointing failure to set up pilot beach seine fishery as promised in your policy and by the department, we ask that you closely track the progress of the selective commercial seine fisheries. The future of mainstem commercial fisheries hinges on the successful deployment of selective alternative gear. Unfortunately, those who oppose your policy would welcome continuing delays in opening the seine fisheries in the hopes of hanging on to gillnet fisheries through selective management as long as possible. The Commission acted decisively after careful and thorough public process to establish this policy. Broad consensus now exists for an end to the use of gillnets in the Columbia mainstem. We must move forward. I would also ask the Commission scrutinize the tendency by both states to default to the use of so-called tangle nets for mainstream fisheries. These are nothing more than small mesh gill nets. We find it compelling that while the departments failed to implement the required pilot beach seine fishery this fall, they had no problem inventing a brand new tangle net fishery targeting coho that took place last month. They based this coho season on less testing data than they already had for the seines, and they seem to ignore the potential impact of the new gill net fishery on future seine fisheries, which show far more conservation and economic promise. Tangle nets produce significant bycatch and mortalities for species like sturgeon and steelhead. We believe that a review of the observer data from this year's fishery should clearly demonstrate that tangle net gear is not appropriate for the fragile mixed stock fisheries of the Columbia River. We would request that you also review this data carefully. Finally, we respectfully request that you work with the department to better outline and communicate to the public how the new recreational priority for the main stem will benefit recreational fisheries across the state. Throughout the policy development, you wisely considered the value of all Columbia River recreational fisheries, both in the lower and the upper basin where I'm from. You acknowledged the fact that over 200,000 anglers buy the salmon and steelhead endorsement, which when combined with license fee revenue generates over $6 million annually for the department. the same time you took into account the $150,000 in license and excise tax revenue contributed by the approximately 150 active gillnet permits. The department should begin working with the recreational fishing community to determine what this recreational priority looks like and begin communicating that with recreational anglers up and down the river. Without that, recreational anglers in different parts of the Columbia River Basin will engage in unnecessary and time-consuming debates about regional sub-allocations of harvest and lose sight of the important benefits of this policy on our future fisheries. Thank you.
Thank you. Doesn't look like it.
Okay, well, thanks. Commissioners, good to see you. And I do, don't envy the acronym world, SAFE, CCA. I think one time I Googled CCA and some corrections company came up that runs prisons, private prisons. So this is not a prison. We are here at the Department of Fish and Wildlife. I thought I'd just come in and follow up on those guys and talk about all the things that have gone on this year that have been, I think, very positive towards the implementation of the policy, but also talk about how important 2014 is. So on January 12th, y'all adopted the policy. There's been a lot going on since then, a lot of it in the legislative and legal side of things that I at least wanted to try to do a decent job summarizing, although I know Phil and others keep you guys up to speed. So as Stan mentioned, there was a barbless hook rule adopted, which I've heard a lot about. Maybe you guys have as well. A lot of lost fish and so forth. We saw ODF&W move forward with the transfer of 500,000 additional select area brights to the safe areas, 500,000 additional spring Chinook smolts from the Sandy, McKenzie, and Clackamas Rivers. That was envisioned in your policy as part of this overall comprehensive plan. Then in July, about 2 days before the Oregon legislative session ended, they passed SB 830 by a vote of 41 yes, 18 no in the House, and a very strong vote, and 18 yes and 12 no in the Senate. And really, that bill called for the very rules that Oregon adopted, along with your guys' policy, to be passed. It legalized the selective gear in Oregon, and it provided a $2 million appropriation of state funding to help fund this, and it authorized the new $10 recreational endorsement fee to help fund this as well. And then finally, in September, the Oregon Commission voted to adopt that new $10 fee, and that's going to start being collected in 2014. Now, on the legal side, almost immediately in January 2013, a lawsuit was filed in Oregon seeking to block the rules. In February, the Oregon Court of Appeals granted a stay of the implementation of those rules. You all got a little fire in April when the lawsuit was correctly filed in the Thurston County Superior Court. Our organization has intervened formally in both cases and is working with the attorneys from both states to defend it. In June, the ODF&W Commission readopted the rules to correct deficiencies, and then in meanwhile, the Thurston County Superior Court dismissed the case in August here in Washington. It has been appealed to the Washington Court of Appeals. And then finally, after the lawsuit was refiled in Oregon, there was a decision in October not to grant a stay there. So that has been appealed. But my message after going through all of that is there's a real opportunity in 2014 and a real need to move forward with implementation, and a lot of positive things have happened. So any questions?
No.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay. All right. That concludes the open public input. No more?